You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with my co-host, Josh Newman. Josh, how are we feeling today?
Feeling good. I like this weather, right? You know, we talk sometimes about the weather and like summer is clearly over. It's like 45 degrees in Sugar House right now. Sun, a little chill. We're getting the hoodies out now. This is where we're at. This is the sweet spot of fall time in the Wasatch Valley.
I wasn't expecting to see snow this morning. I knew it was coming, but I wasn't expecting to see snow. So hopefully that doesn't dissuade our next guest from enjoying his time here in Utah. We've got with us today our special guest, John Canzano, who obviously writes for johncanzano.com. He is also the host of Canzano and Wilner podcast. You know, he decided he wanted to go with the John and John podcast, so we decided to go with the Josh and Josh podcast. We're just stealing from you. How about that?
For sure. And no, I do not. I like to visit the snow. I don't like to wake up in the snow.
Yeah.
And I covered Indiana basketball in the late 90s, and I had no experience with the snow. And I can remember coming out to my car, first time it snowed. There's like 3 feet of snow. I had no idea what to do. It's traumatizing. So when you said that, Newman, I was like, no, I'm not ready for this. And I started thinking, did I pick the wrong game to come to? No, I didn't. This is Utah and Oregon. It's going to be a great game.
Speaking of that, this will be your third game that you've watched in person. You were at the Florida game. You were at the Oregon State game. This will be your third game. What makes this game so attractive to you? I know you kind of try to go to a bunch of different games and do different things. So what to you makes this game so attractive?
Well, I think this Utah team has changed. It's evolved maybe more than any other team in the conference. So over the course of the season, you guys saw this better than anybody, that Florida game. It was like, you know, we had no idea at that point that who was going to play at quarterback and what would Bryson Barnes do and what did Andy Ludwig do on play one. He goes play action and takes a shot down the field. And, you know, they find a way on defense to win that game, and really tough game. And then I saw him again at the Oregon State game. They weren't the same. They were beat up in that game. A lot of injuries that night. I can remember Logan Fano got hurt that night. He was on the sideline. It was really for a few. I happened to watch that game near the sideline because my family, my wife and kids had come to the game, and they were sitting like in row one, and they had an empty seat by them. So I said, hell, I'll sit with you guys instead of sitting in the press box. But it gave me a vantage point that I wasn't used to in seeing the Utah sideline throughout the entire game. And so I got a chance to kind of hear what was going on the sideline, see Cam Rising, try to do a little bit of coaching on the sideline. I'm really impressed with Logan that night. Fano, I mentioned, I wrote about this. Like,
it was a great piece, by the way. I have to mention, if you haven't read it, it was great.
Yeah. He gets hurt and has this moment where, you know, he's really frustrated and upset, but he ends up turning to my wife, and my young daughters were in the crowd, and he apologizes to my kids because he had, you know, been cussing in that injury tent. And my wife was like, hey, that's nothing like what they hear at home. Come on. Like, let's not get carried away. But a very different team that night. And then, you know, I'm watching them the other night at USC. They've evolved again. They're just a different unit with guys playing in different positions, and the coaching staff, I think, doing a really nice job of getting the team ready to play on a week-to-week basis. So, and then Oregon, you know, I think Oregon's the best team in the conference, even though they lost to Washington. But let's see what they do at Rice-Eccles Stadium, where Utah is really tough.
Yeah, John, I mean, you know, you look at the teams that Oregon has played thus far, obviously they're putting up some huge offensive numbers. You know, you call Oregon the best team in the Pac-12. I think Josh and I agree that they're at a minimum the most balanced team in the Pac-12. How much stock do you put, though, in Oregon's offense when they haven't played many tough defenses to this point?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to do. And I think as the season goes on, we're getting a better look at what they can do. But I think Bo Nix is – he rarely makes a mistake. He puts the ball where it needs to go on most of the plays. And then their running game is really what separates them. I think they have a physical run game that they didn't have in years past. And, you know, a couple of former players have reached out to me. Derek Anderson is a guy who played at Oregon State, played in the NFL with the Browns and some other teams. He reached out to me after seeing the Oregon-Washington game, and he says, you know what really got me was how physical Oregon is. And it's true. Their offensive line is built to beat you up and run the football. And I think we talk about Bo Nix, but the Oregon offense is built around Bucky Irving and Jordan James. Those two backs are good, and they'll combine. They'll both be at or near 100 yards in both games. In most games, and then they sort of use the pass game off of that. And so I think they're a run first team, a little different than they were a year ago. I think they're really going to lean in that. But I just think offensively, even on a bad night or a night where they make some bad decisions and don't kick field goals, they still score 33 points. And so I think, you know, I think their lowest point total of the season came that night. You know, they get 31, 33 points on a bad night. So Utah's going to have to be really good. And I think Utah's defense is elite in order to keep this game within range, because I don't think Utah can score with Oregon if it becomes a shootout.
And I want to stick with Bo Nix a little bit. Obviously, you know, he's the Auburn transfer, comes in last year. I don't think a lot of people expected him to perform as well as he did last year. And this year he's taking it even a bigger step. What do you think has allowed him to be so successful? You obviously have talked to Dan Lanning. You understand kind of like the culture there. What has it been that has allowed him to kind of flourish under this type of system?
Yeah, I think he's a really mature kid, you know, in a lot of sense. I think Utah fans can relate. You see Cam Rising play, just a very mature player who, you know, nothing is happening faster than it should happen. The game kind of slows down for him. I think he had some moments early in his career at Auburn where things were moving fast for him, and he saw big stages and hostile crowds, and, you know, he wilted a little bit under some of those expectations. So I don't think any of this is a big deal to Bo Nix, which, you know, is interesting. He stays very level. He is a coach on the field. I thought it was interesting last year in the Holiday Bowl at the end on the final drive. You know, Oregon was without its offensive coordinator. Kenny Dillingham had already left, gone to Arizona State. And Dan Lanning later said that Bo Nix was deciding what to run on the game-winning drive. And so you've got a guy on the field who's played a lot of football, and he has got a younger coordinator with him now in Will Stein, who seems to have come in and just said, hey, I want to run what you guys were running last year. I'll add a few wrinkles to it. And I think when Oregon's at its best, Bucky Irving's running the ball, and then Bo Nix is just sort of distributing, but he just doesn't make mistakes. He won't throw a pick six. He won't put his receiver in a bad position. I don't know how much of an NFL player he's going to be. Like, I think he can make a roster. I don't know if he can play in the NFL, but he's a really good college quarterback and an example of what NIL can do in bringing a guy back for another year.
John, where is Oregon most vulnerable? Or really, if we think that they're the most balanced team in the conference, are they vulnerable somewhere, really?
Yeah, I think Washington showed late in that game. You know, Oregon had some backup defensive backs in the game, and I don't know how healthy they are there still. But Washington showed that you can challenge those guys. And, you know, I think you can run the ball a little bit on Oregon. You have to. And I expect that Andy Ludwig will have a plan there. I mean, I think Ludwig's one of the best coordinators in college football, and I think he'll have a great plan. But I think you gotta soften Oregon up. You gotta try to be physical with them. I think Utah can do that. And then I think you need to challenge their defensive backs down the field. You may have some bad plays, and maybe Bryson Barnes or whoever's throwing those passes is gonna throw an interception here or there. But I think you have to keep them honest by challenging them down the field, because if you don't, they will bring guys to the line of scrimmage and they will they'll dare you to throw the football. And I think they're pretty aggressive on the defensive side. You see what they do, they'll come after you a little bit. But I just, the more I look at their team, the more I think that they are the team that is built the best. Now I don't know if they can go undefeated the rest of the way. I think it's a tall order to try to win at Utah, to try to beat Oregon State. You got a game with USC. Who knows what USC is going to be in a couple weeks. I still think Oregon can get to Vegas and has a path there that's pretty clear for them.
You know, speaking with that, you know, this title race is going to be interesting. Obviously, there's a lot of these teams. You know, Oregon is already one game behind Washington now because of that rivalry loss. What do you think happens, barring, you know, let's say Oregon does lose this game? What do you think happens for that program? Do you feel like Like, is this where, obviously it's not where they want to be, but like, do you think that this is something they can recover from, or is this a big setback from what Dan Lanning's trying to do at Oregon?
Yeah, if they lose this game, I think it's a big setback. And I think it's a pivot point for him because, you know, especially if you look at the losses he's had, he loses the game to Georgia in week one. You kind of throw that one out. But then you look back to last season and, you know, he loses to Oregon State in the rivalry game, loses to Washington, and then he loses to Washington again this year. That's it. Like everything else he's cleaned up on. And so I don't think he can afford to, you know, have this season be derailed by anything more than, hey, a loss in the conference championship game and feel good about it. Like they expect to get there and they expect to dance off into the Big Ten with a win. But this conference is so hard. And I can imagine, you know, is if Utah fans can think about what Rice-Eccles Stadium is at its best. And I've been there for the USC games, that stadium, arguably the best home field advantage that I've seen anywhere at any time in the Pac-12 conference. Kyle Whittingham said, oh, is it worth 5 or 6 points? I think it might be worth more. It might be like 8 or 9 points. Mm-hmm. And I think Autzen Stadium has that effect, but maybe it's a 6-point, 7-point swing. Reser Stadium, tough place to play. But this is a huge challenge for Oregon. And if Cam Rising were playing in this game, and I know Utah fans don't want to hear that, I would pick Utah to win this game. And I just think they could do a little more on offense. But right now I'm picking Oregon, but I think I think it's a close game. I think the spread was like 6.5, 7 points. I think it's going to be right in there. It's going to be a one score game.
All complaints from Utah fans about mentioning Rising at all can be sent to johncanzano.com. They don't want to hear that right now, John.
I know.
You know, you look at this Utah team, obviously, you know, as you said, the defense is elite. They've done some huge things. The offense is now coming around now, you know, with Sione Vaki, with, you know, with Bryson Barnes playing better. What does Oregon have to do to kind of slow down Sione Vaki? Because, you know, Cal couldn't and USC certainly couldn't. But now there's 2 weeks worth of film and you have a better idea of what Vaki is capable of.
Yeah, but do we know what Utah's going to do? Like Andy Ludwig might put a defensive end at tight end. He might have, you know, no quarterback in the game. Like it's been that kind of year. They've MacGyvered it. And that's coaching. I think it's just remarkable to see. But I think just Oregon physically has prided itself on being, you know, I think Oregon and UCLA are those two teams where you look at and they say just physically, they are defensively, physically sound. And I think Utah gets a good look at that in practice every day. So I think it's going to be a real test to see, can Utah hand the ball off and control the line of scrimmage, especially early in the game. I'm always watching where the piles are falling. I'll be watching that on Saturday. How are those piles falling in the first quarter? And what Oregon has done to teams throughout this season is, you know, maybe in the first quarter they have a little success, you know, running the football or stopping the run. But late in the game, Oregon has just been physically better than their opponents. And I think this is a great test because Utah is a great second half team too. So I don't know if it's necessarily like any secret, like any one thing to stopping that run game or trying to limit what Utah is doing. I just think it's going to be a huge test. Like, can Oregon stop Utah? If they can stop Utah's run game, Utah could be in trouble. But if they don't, I think this is a really good game because I think Utah will score a little better than people expect against Oregon.
You've obviously, you know, been in the Oregon market. You understand that market a lot, but you've also, especially in your new role, have been given the opportunity to really cover a lot of the conference, and you've seen a lot what's going on and what's happening. You know, what obviously we know this is the last year. You've done a lot of the reporting on that, and it's been great reporting. But for you personally, you've covered a lot of these different teams. What has this last year of the Pac-12 meant to you, especially knowing that it's still not finished with Oregon State and Washington State still kind of in those court battles?
Yeah, you know, I can remember as a little kid being in school and wanting the school year to end so I can get to summer. This is the opposite of that. This is like reading a good book, or this is like, you know, the Game of Thrones final season or Breaking Bad, whatever, you know, series you binged watched. It's like you got to a point of the final season and you went, well, wait a minute, let me slow down. Maybe we shouldn't watch 3 episodes tonight and stay up until 1 o'clock in the morning watching this stuff. Let's just slow down and savor a little bit. For me personally, like I grew up in what was the Pac-10 conference footprint, and I grew up going to games in the history of this conference. And so it's sad. There's a sadness that's there. And as I talk to coaches and ADs around the conference, you know, even Kyle Whittingham this week, you know, saying it's a sad thing, even though he's looking ahead on the horizon at the Big 12. and Oregon and Washington go into the Big Ten. And I still think there's a little bit of a sadness here, but man, doesn't what we see, doesn't it just underscore the fact that like this conference, when it's at its best, is a great football conference. Utah has thrived in it. Like, I don't think Utah wanted it to end. I really don't think, you know, about 8 or 9 of the schools were like happy to see any of this happen. And so I keep thinking that, you know, when college football gets its act together, you know, and gets back to geography, there's probably a 16 team.
When? When? That hasn't happened ever. What do you mean when?
There's a 16 team conference that's waiting to happen that includes Utah, includes the Arizona schools, Oregon State, Washington State, Oregon. I think it all comes back together. David Shaw told me, he said the geography will win out. I believe it will win out, but I'm like lingering. If this is a book, I'm lingering a little bit. I'm not turning the pages as quickly as I typically do in a season because I'm really savoring this.
Before we let you go, John, I think we do need to mention the real goof today, that the Holiday Bowl is now sponsored by
yes.
DirecTV after the Pac-12 network could not get DirecTV on board. I think that's the height of hilarity, quite honestly.
There's a lot of that going on, man. There's some wonky things that are happening. There's some poetry that is buried in all of this. But you know, I don't know what do you guys think about the game Saturday? I mean, does game day being there add extra emotion, or is there just a cap on what Rice-Eccles Stadium can be on a college football game day?
I mean, I think game day definitely adds to the atmosphere and the excitement, but you know, look, it's going to be kickoff at 1:30 and the place is going to be 2/3 empty because it's a 1:30 game. The place will fill in. Okay. It's going to be a sellout, but the place will not be full of kickoff. So let's not pretend, you know, that people are in their seats here on time. Okay.
He's starting early. He just wants the fans mad at him. You know,
am I wrong? I'm not wrong.
He's not wrong. I just think it's
funny. Is this like a Los Angeles, Southern California crowd.
Not quite that bad.
No. It's not that bad. I'm half kidding, but no, I mean, look, this is a monster game, obviously for Utah, and Utah looks a lot different than it did even 3 weeks ago. I mean, if you were there or watching that Oregon State game, I don't think that anybody thought that this Utah team could walk into the Coliseum and win. The offense has now scored 34 points in consecutive games. John's raising his hand. I don't know. This team and this season looks markedly different than it did 3 weeks ago. And if Utah can pull this off, the season takes another, you know, crazy twist, crazy turn. If they win this game, anything is possible and everything is on the table. But yeah, you know, the game day stuff, I mean, certainly adds to the atmosphere and adds to what's at stake here on Saturday.
Yeah, I told you, I think we had a conversation about it. I thought Utah could score 34 points on USC. I thought
you did say that. Yeah,
that was the number. And that's what it took. But this week, I think they need to get, I think Oregon's going to score 31. And I think I have a hard time seeing Utah getting into the high 20s against Oregon. Now, I'd love to be wrong and have this be like a 3-point game, somebody kicking a field goal, but I think I picked it like 30-24, something like that. But I think it's going to be like a bruising game. I think there's going to be big collisions. And, you know, I think it's a one-score game, but I think the number is 31 to win this game.
And I think you're probably right there. I think this is a game that anybody that can cross that 30 threshold probably comes out on top. I wouldn't even be surprised if getting to 24 becomes a tough number for these teams to get to. And who knows? Bo Nix is dynamic and can do a lot. So I don't know. It'll be an interesting. I'm looking forward to it. USC and Utah has always been kind of that one game that Utah fans have looked to. But I feel like Oregon, from the very beginning, it was always, you know, back when Chip Kelly was there, they were trying to kind of prove themselves. And Kyle put 62 on Chip Kelly's team, and he was trying to do whatever he could to kind of raise the bar of Utah to be able to kind of show themselves as being on par with Oregon. Obviously, as of years late, Utah has shown that. They obviously beat him twice 2 years ago. I mean, this is a fun rivalry. I don't think it's as much as the Utah-USC game, but this is a fun game that I think everybody looks forward to. So that place is going to be hopping on Saturday.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, like all six of these games feature matchups of teams that will not belong in the same conference next year. This is the only time all season that's happening. These are all goodbye games. And so, you know, for your viewers and listeners, like take a look across the conference. You're going to, you know, get to see Cal play USC for what could be the last time in a while, and Oregon State play at Arizona, and Oregon and Utah, they may meet in a playoff game, because I think Utah is going to dominate the Big 12. Big 12 fans don't want to hear that, but Utah is going to carry that league. I think unless they meet in a playoff game, this could be it for a while.
Yeah. You know, we talked a lot about the fact that Utah USC was not like a true college football rivalry, but when those teams met, it always felt like something bigger and that there was something at stake. And Utah, Oregon over the years, it wasn't Utah USC, but like Utah, Oregon has turned into sort of that, right? Not a true college football rivalry, but when they get together, it's something different, right? It's not just another regular season game. And they've met in the Pac-12 championship game, and they've met in high leverage spots at Rice-Eccles Stadium in 2021. The game in Eugene came down to the end in 2022. So I'm a rivalry guy, or I'm a tradition, you know, high level series guy. And it's a shame that this is going away, because it's been a lot of fun here for the last few years.
Yeah. And I think that, look, there's a lot of Oregon fans, despite what happened at Autzen Stadium last year, a lot of Oregon fans that feel like they owe Utah one. And so I just think there's a lot of respect, obviously, between the fan bases and the programs. And I think it's gonna be a hell of a game. I'll be there. Game day will be there. You guys will be there. Let's see what happens. What's the forecast for the, will weather be a factor?
It could. My understanding, it's changed a little bit. It might not rain or snow. I think it was supposed to during the game, but I think it's changing. So
it's going to be in like the mid 40s. It's going to feel like fall outside. Yeah.
But I mean, a little bit of weather would, I think, help Utah's cause, I think, more than Oregon. But
I agree. Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Agreed. Well, thank you so much, John. We appreciate it. Tell everybody where they can find you if they haven't heard for some reason.
Yeah, johnconzano.com. You can read me there, or at ksl.com. How about that?
That's right. We get to publish John's articles every once in a while, and he's been a great partner with us and being able to do this. And he's always a great writer and voice, obviously, in your radio shows and podcasts. So we appreciate the time.
And people keep asking me, will I continue to cover Utah? And I will. I think, you know, I'm going to continue to cover the same teams and write about college football. And so I'm excited to see what happens when Utah goes to the Big 12. But we all know Utah's going to dominate.
we'll let you take the Twitter heat for that one.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, guys.
That was John Canzano of johnconzano.com and the Canzano and Wilner podcast. Obviously, he's been in this environment for a long time. He's done a lot. He's reported a lot of things. Honestly, one of the I credit John with I don't want to go single-handedly, but I think his reporting of the Larry Scott era really changed the tone and tenor of kind of what the presidents were thinking about him. Look, I mean, it's not just his reporting that did it, but I think he did a really good job of painting the picture of just kind of what went on. Obviously, the Pac-12 is now in a completely different state than even then, but he's always been kind of one of those great voices to be able to listen to, and he sees this conference in a different level. And obviously, he, you know, the Oregon teams are kind of in his background, so he's going to focus on those teams more, so that's there. But it's always a great perspective. Was there anything that he said? And I asked you this a lot, but is there anything he said that kind of changed your opinion on what this game is, or is it just kind of more solidify what you and I have thought going into this game?
I don't think he changed my mind really. I forget the score that I picked on the KSL pick'em that we do every week, but like Oregon is not USC, and you know, Oregon has more horses and they're more balanced and they're more dangerous, and Bucky Irving is a better running back than anybody that USC has. This strikes me as a two-score game. I just don't think Utah might have the defense, but they don't have the offense right now to keep up with what Oregon can do. And look, you know, we can look at some of the numbers, and Oregon's offense is putting up what it's putting up, but it hasn't played against a stout defense like Utah has. I think I think the absence of Lander Barton in the middle of that defense is just gigantic. Tough to quantify. I'm not a good game picker. Okay, I say that up front, but this strikes me as a two score game in favor of Oregon.
This was a hard one, and I even told you on Saturday when we were in LA that I kind of like to, when I get to a, you know, whatever game it is, whether it's at home or away, I kind of try to get the vibe in the air, whatever that may be, and kind of sense what Utah's going. I obviously have to have my picks in before then, and so whatever.
Sure.
This is another one where I just don't know. Like, I'm leaning more towards Oregon, probably even more so than I was with USC. I did pick USC to beat Utah, and even though there was a nagging thought in my head, there is nagging in this game just because it is Rice-Eccles Stadium and it is a difficult place to play and it is the most difficult defense that Oregon will play. But this feels like Oregon would have to make mistakes for them to lose this game. And we'll get into this more. And, you know, I don't want to like just cut ourselves off at the knees right here and end our podcast. But I do think that this is a very difficult game for Utah, probably the hardest game that they will face this year. You know, their defense is probably better than Oregon State's. Maybe you can debate that. Utah's offense obviously wasn't great against Oregon State, but they're a completely different team, so maybe that changes some of it. I just, to me, I don't really know what to go into this, and I guess the one nagging feeling that I have, and maybe this is where we can transition, is that Oregon hasn't faced a really tough defense, right?
Yeah.
They're facing teams. I went in and I did all the math and everything, and I'm not going to put that on here or anything that way. I'm potentially trying to write an article about this, so we'll see if it happens. I don't know. Sometimes the weeks get a little difficult, so we'll see.
But yeah,
this is a team that, you know, they've faced, if you were to kind of average it out, they would have faced on average the 102nd best defense on a week to week basis. That's not great. So their numbers, I don't want to say their numbers are inflated. They are. They're still a good team, but take that with kind of that context, knowing that they're going up against defenses that aren't going to be anywhere near Utah's. Utah is the 14th best defense. This is going to be a completely different game, but that doesn't mean that this still isn't a good Oregon team and they can't win. Just that's just the nature of what it is.
Yeah. I don't, you know what? I don't think like at all this week that I've really like went down Oregon's schedule. I just didn't look at it for some reason.
It's not great.
And now I'm looking at it like really closer. Portland State, you needed a late comeback, if I'm not mistaken, to beat Texas Tech. Yeah, you needed to score 24 quarter points.
Yeah, that was really close.
Yeah, so you won by 8. You needed 24 quarter points. Hawaii, Colorado, without Travis Hunter, Stanford, which is bad. You probably played well enough to beat Washington, but you didn't. You played well enough to beat Washington. You didn't. You were right there. And then Washington State, you know, you win 38-24. But it was a game.
Yeah.
You know, Washington State is tough. You know, they're not one of the elite Pac-12 teams, but they're tough, and they made things a little difficult on Oregon. So now, you know, everybody's I think a lot of people are kind of in this thought process where Utah has to deal with Oregon, which is accurate. But Oregon has to deal with Utah too.
Exactly.
Okay. Oregon has to deal with Utah's defensive front four. And Bo Nix is going to have to deal with Cole Bishop and the defensive backfield. So, you know, I like that spread where it is at 6.5. I think that's a fair number. And now that I'm sitting here, like, talking it out, I kind of hate my score prediction now.
You've still got time to change it.
Even though No.
Just we need,
you we need to keep go with integrity your heart. Here.
If you always change it, it's always wrong. I've learned that. So.
I don't know. My gut still says Oregon by at least a score, but yeah, there's certainly an avenue here for Utah, but you really have to play well and, you know, you really have to do things right. And I don't think Oregon is going to make the same kind of mistakes or even as many mistakes as USC did last week.
Just coaching alone, I think Dan Lanning is a better coach, right? It's hard to say because Lincoln Riley's been in some great games over the years and he's done some great things, but I think Kyle Whittingham outcoached him, hands down. I don't know that Dan Lanning is going to be in that same scenario. That's not to say Dan Lanning's had his own foibles and different things that he's done.
God.
So let's not pretend like he's some you know untouchable being here. But yeah, I feel like this is going to be too very well coached teams going at it, and it's really just going to come down who makes the biggest mistake or if one team can kind of set their own tone, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, I was catching up on some Oregon coverage from a few days back and during Lanning's Monday evening press conference, you know, his normal weekly press conference, he had some very like positive things to say about Kyle Whittingham and about Utah's defense. I'm paraphrasing here, okay, but Dan Lanning basically said that he respects Utah's defense the most of any other team in the Pac-12 just because of how they operate and where they've been and what they've looked like. So I don't know that Kyle Whittingham has a relationship really, you know, with Dan Lanning, but, you know, Dan Lanning is one of those like young, very capable, very good head coaches. And he has very quickly, you know, taken the reins of Oregon and hasn't turned them into a Pac-12 championship contender. They're always a Pac-12 championship contender, but he has taken the reins from Mario Cristobal and kind of turned over the roster very quickly in his own vision. And here we are, Oregon, you know, one loss Oregon, number eight in the country, in the mix for the Pac-12 championship. And yeah, you know, let's be honest, if things break right, there's, you know, there's reason to believe that if Oregon were to win out, they could be in the college football playoff. I don't think that's that crazy.
Yeah, and I think Oregon is in a good spot, right? I mean, I think this is – Canzano didn't say inflection point. He said it was trying to remember what he said. But it would basically – this is a point to kind of prove to Oregon, are you really up for the task, or are you going to kind of take that back seat still? This to me – like, you can't look at last year's game against Utah as anywhere near the similarities, right? Like, there's a lot that's changed, obviously, you know, not even just taking into account Cam Rising. You know, Bo Nix was injured that game. You're at Autzen Stadium, which is an incredible place to play.
Did Bo Nix have his foot amputated before that
yeah,
game?
Yeah, I heard he had it amputated, and he played on one nub, you know.
Anyway, go on.
But no, I mean, there's a lot there, and that was like a really ugly game in a lot of respects, right?
Yeah.
These two teams, I think these are two teams that are equally fit to kind of fight and duke it out. They're not the Oregons under Chip Kelly where they're just going to light you up. They have that ability. Bo Nix has that ability, but this is a much more balanced team in that regard where they're going to go and they're going to fight and try to be physical with Utah. And I think Dan Lanning has built his team that way that it allows himself to put his team in as a championship contender just because he is balanced that way, right? Yeah. You can't just rely on points as Lincoln Riley's finding out. And so I think, you know, this is what makes this game difficult is because you see last year's result and you see how hard these two programs fought. And I don't see it's going to be anything different that way. The question is, you know, where is it going to break? And that could break for either one of these teams. I don't want to sit here and try to, like, you know, say that Oregon is the only one that's going to come away from this as the winner. But I think it's going to have to break more against Oregon than it does for Utah for Oregon to lose this game, right? Like, I don't think just sitting here as a home crowd and saying, oh, Rice Eccles, and we've got hand-painted helmets, and we've never lost there, and we've got an 18-game winning streak, all these different things going on, that's not good enough, right? Like, yeah, your offense is better with Jaquinnon Jackson and Sione Vaki back there. Bryson Barnes is coming into his own, but I don't know if any of that is still good enough to be able to beat this Oregon team. But at the same time, I don't know, because Oregon hasn't played anybody of salt on defense, right? Like, they just haven't. And so that's where this game becomes difficult. And if you're better, don't touch this. Like, just don't touch it. That's my one advice. Just don't touch this game. But I wouldn't touch any Utah game just because I think they're gritty and they're going to find a way to win.
Well, we're also not going to touch a Utah game because we cover Utah, but
well, sure,
I digress. Yeah. You know, you're thinking back to last year's game and Oregon was in control of that for the first half. And then the tone shifted. And
should've, Utah should have lost it, honestly.
No, Rising was bad in that game.
He was, and that was his first game, really, if I remember right, coming off of the MPFL where because he had the Washington State where he missed, and I think that was the first game back. Am I wrong?
No,
did he have one game between that?
Didn't he play against Stanford and Arizona?
Maybe that's what it was. But you could tell, like, he was starting to significantly be more hampered. And I don't want to use that as an excuse, but
no,
it applied.
He did. Okay. Yeah. Yes. I remember that night thinking that he did not look like himself. Yep. But even still, there was some bad decision making from Rising that was atypical. Okay, that's not the way he plays football. He, you know, he underthrew some guys. Fourth down pass when they had to have it.
That one
he
threw it at Devon, or was it Devon?
He threw it at Dalton Kincaid's feet.
Yeah,
and it just, you know, the whole thing was just off. And, you know, look, Oregon like tried to give that game away. Like Bo Nix like tried to give that game away. Right, Clark Phillips with the late pick gave Utah the ball back. Utah did not play well enough to win that game last year.
No.
But they had plenty of opportunities to get over the hump and figure it out. So I think some of us, and look, maybe I'm guilty of this as well. I think some of us, including myself, are maybe viewing this as too much in a sense of like a monumental task for Utah to get this done. And maybe it is. Like, I'm sitting here now and like we're talking, like I can't decide, but Utah has done enough in the last 2 weeks, even though they're stepping up in class to play Oregon. Utah has done enough in the last 2 weeks where you at least go into Saturday believing that they can win this game. Mm-hmm. Like, there's reason to believe that they can win this game. And I think one big question I have going into this game is, okay, Sione Vaki had a big game against Cal. He had a bigger game against USC. And as I asked John this, you know, you now have 2 weeks of tape on Sione Vaki. Like, that is out there on film.
Wait, does he Oregon, was on film?
Yeah, boom. I was waiting for you.
Yes, from the top ropes.
Yeah.
So mind-boggling.
I love it. There's 2 weeks of film. So does Oregon figure out a way to stop Sione Vaki, slow down Sione Vaki? Does Andy Ludwig have new wrinkles that he has not thrown out there yet? I think with Vaki, it's been pretty straightforward. You're not asking him to do anything like super duper exotic. Yeah, I mean, that's my big question. If Vaki is like carrying this offense right now, which he is, how do you put him in different positions to continue to do that, knowing that Oregon is going to be keying on him?
I just want to see Vaki as a quarterback now. I mean, he's been a quarterback in the Wildcat package.
Oh,
but
this fan base will light that place on fire if he like throws an interception on like a halfback option or something.
I want to see what happens if, like, you know, they're expecting him on a sweep or something like that, and they toss it back to him, and then he like throws it like 30-yard pass to Vele. Or, I don't know, man. Like,
place will go nuts.
Hey, it's been crazier. I don't know. Like, could there be anything that tops Britton Covey taking it back against Oregon? I don't know, but that something like Vaki doing something like that, I don't know. Like, he's a legit star, though. Like, it's funny, like, Tuesday nights, Utah always brings in a youth football team to come,
right,
and they get to meet him, and, you know, they're always like, Cam, you know, and they swarm him and take his picture and everything. But this was probably the first week where I noticed that Sione Vaki, more than anybody else, was the one that was targeted, right? Like, they loved him, and so it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to see. And, you know, I'm curious to see what kind of wrinkles that they bring into this. You know, you can't go with the same game plan, right? Like, you have to imagine that they're going to cut off that wheel route, or at least, you know, you wonder if anybody's watching film on Utah, but we know some people aren't. But I think this is one of those games too, where Andy Ludwig could very much so just try the same things, or this is one where he gets a little wild and starts doing some trickerations and you start seeing some things. I don't know if that is where Utah feels like they can win this game. I still think they have to kind of be that same game plan that they have. You got to keep Bryson comfortable. You don't want to get too cute and kind of hurt yourself. But I wouldn't be surprised if this is a game where Andy kind of opens it up a little bit more, maybe with Bryson feeling a little bit more comfortable and seeing what kind of things he can do against this Oregon defense. So, but on, you know, flipping over to Oregon a little bit more, Bo Nix, we talked about them, about him with John Canzano. This is a little different this year, and I haven't done the full comparisons at to this point. Last year, this is where Bo was, but right now he leads the country with completion percentages at 78.4. Like, he is incredibly accurate. Like, yeah. I need to go back and look. I think that was like close to Joe Burrow-esque that year that he won. I mean, this is insane numbers. He's put up 19 touchdowns. He's only thrown one interception. Like, he's doing everything that he can to be able to get Oregon where they need to be. Granted, we said they haven't played that many hard defenses, so maybe that's part of that. But this is going to be a team that, or just Bo Nix in general, he is a very composed veteran player that makes it very difficult. Yes, he's a dual threat. He's only rushed for, I think it's 105 yards this year. So it's not like he's lighting up the ground game and whatever that may be, but you still have to respect him. And I think that's what makes Utah a little bit nervous. I asked Kyle, I think it was Tuesday in his availability, is it more difficult to face a team like this that is balanced than you're not taking away one aspect? And he 100% owned up to it. He said, yes, this is one of the hardest games to scheme for, because you can't just cut off one part of the game plan and then hope that, you know, force them to beat you that way. This is a game plan where if Bucky Irving isn't going, you know, Bo Nix is going to throw to a million of his receivers that do well. If you cut off there, Bucky Irving's going to come. So, like, this is probably the tallest task that Utah will face, Morgan Scalley will face. And if they can do it against a team like Oregon, I don't want to put too much hyperbole into this, but I think if you can do it against Oregon, I don't think there's anybody you couldn't do it against this year.
Why is that hyperbole?
I guess the reason I'm saying that is probably because Washington is still on the schedule, right?
Sure.
And you know, their passing game, their run game is not there, so maybe they're much more one-dimensional. So you're right. It's not hyperbole. You win.
No. you remember, like, at the beginning of last season when Bo Nix had come to Oregon and then they got destroyed at Georgia, Georgia in Atlanta, and we were talking about, well, same old Bo Nix, like that's what he was at Auburn, like that's what he's going to be at Oregon. And no, he got a fresh start in a new system, and he has flourished. You know, you read all the stories about, you know, he got married in the off season, and that, you know, that settled him down, and he's more focused on the task at hand, and like his life is really, you know, together now, and he got out of the, you know, the pressure cooker of Auburn. And like, look, the Heisman possibility, I don't know, okay? You know, the loss to Washington may have taken that away, but, like, his numbers are strong enough, and Oregon is good enough where, look, if Oregon runs the table, why can't Bo Nix be part of the Heisman conversation? Point is, it's like, look, the transfer portal kind of allows you to live different lives now, and at one point, you know, Bo Nix was viewed as this kind of, like, incapable kind of, you know, goat type of player at Auburn, and he comes to Oregon and he completely reinvents himself, and he has Oregon in the position he's in now. Let me ask you this, right? You know, you've covered this league for long enough, especially lately. Who's a tougher quarterback to play against, Caleb Williams or Bo Nix?
Ooh, that's tough, because I would say last year Caleb was. I think he was still kind of, a lot of people hadn't figured out how shifty he could be back there. Plus, he was running it a lot more. But I think this year, there's a difference with Bo. He seems much more comfortable, you know, composed. And yeah. I think that's what makes him more deadly, right? Like, he's just as talented as a Caleb Williams in his passing. I don't think he's, like John said, I don't know that he's going to have the NFL accolades that as a Caleb Williams. But I think there's something dangerous about a quarterback that feels comfortable in their own skin, right? Like, once you get to that point as a quarterback, especially at the collegiate level, it is very difficult to beat you. And I think that's where Bo is at right now, right? Like, he feels comfortable. He's a year off of you know, having to kind of change his name and reform himself in the public's eye. He's now done that. The university went all in and started a Heisman campaign for him, just kind of really just putting their support behind him, whether that was legitimate or not. And I think it wasn't not legitimate. Like, I think there is a legitimacy there to his Heisman campaign. But I think it just shows that, look, there's so much trust in you that you can just go in there and do what you need to. To a far lesser extent, that's the same way with Bryson Barnes. He feels much more comfortable in the offense, and it allows him to be able to cook a little bit more. Completely different players. Bo Nix is obviously on another level than Bryson Barnes, but I think that's what makes a quarterback dangerous, is when you feel comfortable, that helps you. That's why Tom Brady was unbeatable, right? Like, it's not like Tom Brady was just destroying you with his arm strength, and he could. But, like, he knew that he could fit balls into certain places because he was confident in that. He could turn any wide receiver into a Julian Edelman or whatever the wide receiver he had.
Yeah, he did.
He did. I mean, Julian Edelman, like, shouldn't have been the type of player that he was based on, like, his measurables and everything.
Sure.
But, like, that's that level, right? If you can feel confident as a quarterback, it's a complete game changer. And I think that's what makes this Oregon team more dangerous than anything. Bucky Irving, you can talk about him, and Franklin, the right receiver, you can talk about all these guys, and for good reason. But I think those don't have the same impact as Bo Nix, just simply because of where he's at in his game. If you can rattle Bo in Rice-Eccles Stadium, I think Utah has a far better chance. But if you allow him to cook any little bit, he's going to look like Justin Herbert out there when Utah played him, right? And they could not answer against Justin Herbert. And granted, he's an NFL quarterback and has, you know, all that to his name. But that's where I think Utah has to really try to win this game. You've got to frazzle Bo Nix and get him into uncomfortable situations. And if you don't, he's going to beat you.
Yeah. You know, the script has us talking about, like, game-winning strategy later. But, like, you nailed it.
Dang, I mean,
you
have to make... I just keep cutting our knees off, man.
That's all right, man. No, you have to make Bo Nix uncomfortable, and you have to, like last week against Caleb Williams, you wanted to keep him in the pocket, right? So Morgan Scalley was not doing much, if any, blitzing.
Yeah.
And he was dropping everybody back in the coverage and just having his defensive front go. This is, to me, this is the opposite. You want to make Bo Nix uncomfortable. You want to make him leave the pocket, make him a little frazzled, make him make a decision with his legs. So, again, easier said than done, but this Utah defensive front, after all the injuries and after guys being banged up, some guys are still banged up, but right now they're probably as healthy as they've been all season. We know, you know, Van Fillinger's situation. He's, you know, he's still out there and he's still grinding it out. He is not healthy, but you know, that defensive front, even into the depth, even to like numbers 5, 6, 7, they are as healthy now as they've been probably at any point this season.
And this is where I think linebacker depth is going to really make or break Utah. Obviously, losing Lander Barton is one of your key players who can play up a lot in the box and, yeah, really kind of hassle a quarterback. That's where this changes. You know, you get Lavani DeMooney, and it's funny that, like, we're talking about Lavani DeMooney and kind of like, yeah, you have him. Like, he literally led Stanford as their sole defensive player last year. It's not like he's some guy that's some slouch. Like, this is a phenomenal player. It's just he hasn't been able to be kind of that household name because there's been so many other people. So,
right.
This is where I think, you know, he and Sione Fotu, you've got Justin Medlock in the back. There's guys back there. If they can find a way to put pressure on there and be able to still provide the coverage that is necessary, but also kind of add pressure into that box, whether it's simulated or if it's actually real pressure in design blitzes or whatever that may be, I think that's where this game can kind of be won as well, is you've got to be able to have them, you know what your pieces are around you, but you've got to find a good linebacker core that is going to do well. They still have Kareni Reed, who's a veteran player, and that's going to change it. So I don't know. I'm curious to see that. To me, going into this game, that's where I'm kind of focusing on most, is what's going to happen at linebacker and how does Utah fare there. So I don't know if we want to kind of jump to that point now, but for you, I mean, what is kind of the strategy for Utah to win this game? Is it that? Is it frazzling Bo Nix like we talked about? Or what's kind of the strategy in your eyes?
I mean, yeah. I mean, just to go back to that, yeah, I think it's rattling Bo Nix, getting Bo Nix into uncomfortable situations, bringing some pressure, bringing some blitzes. Because if you're – look, the game last year at Autzen when Nix had the amputated foot and he was playing on one leg – I thought I'd get a better laugh out of that.
It took me a second. I'm not going to lie. It was so commonplace that I was just like, oh yeah, that's just a fact.
I love it.
That's just a fact. Like, it's funny because, like, even you said that and it's like, he just said amputated and I just like didn't even react. Okay, we're good.
Inside baseball, folks.
Yeah.
The game last year at Autzen when Nix was hurt, Oregon's game plan was very clear, was to have him take a short drop and get rid of the ball quickly. So Utah had no chance to get to Nix and couldn't blitz him and couldn't bring the house. So I don't know if that's the game plan again, but Utah needs to get to Nix, or, you know, at least get some pressure, get a hand in his face, get a hand up, make him think about it. Cause if he's able to just take a short drop and get rid of it and his jersey's clean, that does not bode well for Utah, I don't think.
Yeah, this is far different than Caleb Williams, where you were just trying to contain him. This is, like you said, you have to put pressure on him. You've got to make him think. You've got to collapse that pocket. The hard part is Oregon's offensive line is very talented at yes, keeping that pocket alive and ready for Bo Nix. So I agree. Maybe it's just trench warfare, right? Like, you've got to be able to win the lines and do that, and that's what takes place. So,
yeah.
Before we kind of wrap this thing up, obviously ESPN's College Game Day is coming this weekend. They appear technically tomorrow, where they will be doing some TV shows for ESPN, Pat McAfee, that kind of stuff. You got a little bit of a behind the scenes look in talking to some people. So I kind of want to give you a little bit of a moment to kind of shout out what happened there and how this all thing came together.
Yeah. So earlier this week, and, you know, the story that Josh just alluded to, available right now on KSL.com, I was able to talk to Gavin Goff earlier this week. Okay, Gavin Goff is essentially the head of facilities at the University of Utah. He is the man kind of tasked with, you know, leading this campus in getting ready to host game day. So I talked to Gavin in terms of, you know, when did they find out that game day was coming? How much planning went into this thing before the announcement? Obviously, it came on Sunday. What goes on, you know, from, you know, the announcement Sunday, what happens Monday, Tuesday, you know, the game day crew shows up Wednesday. A lot of the set building is going on today, right now, as we speak. So again, you know, just trying to peel back a bit of the curtain, because look, all you folks see is the finished product. If you'll be there on Saturday morning, or if you're watching on TV, all the general public sees is the finished product, but it's a very, you know, intricate task of, you know, communication and getting ready and making sure everything is in line. So all you see is the, you know, the well done finished product. So again, you know, pretty enlightening conversation with Gavin Goff. You can see that right now on KSL.com. The link is also on my Twitter handle, at @Joshua_Newman.
Yeah. It's been 7 years since game day has come to Utah. You know, you would think that they're a little bit more rusty based on how long it's been, but they keep that thing well oiled, and yeah. The reality is, this isn't the first time that Utah. What did you say? It's the letter that they got. What's it called?
Yeah. So the university, ESPN sends prospective game day sites a prep letter.
That's right.
And what a prep letter essentially is, we're not telling you that game day is coming here, but like we've identified, you know, Utah, Oregon. We're talking like 2 or 3 weeks ago, right? The prep letter tells you, hey, we've identified this game as a potential game day site. FYI, just, you know, be potentially ready to host. So as Gavin Goff said, look, it's ESPN. Okay. ESPN knows what it's doing. They've been, you know, doing game day since like the late 80s. They've been going to campuses every week since like 94 or 95. So ESPN knows what it's doing. And Utah, not even with game day, Utah has hosted the NCAA tournament. They just hosted the NCAA tournament for the women, you know, the first and second round. So this is not Utah's first rodeo in terms of welcoming a giant outfit to campus to host something, whether that be ESPN or the NCAA.
Yeah, these are cool stories, because I think they're just, you know, out of the norm. They are commonplace, right? Like you said, but you know, Utah will then host the men's basketball tournament again this spring, and so there's always a lot of things going on. But it's an interesting look behind the scenes. They do get these letters from time to time. I think they got one early this year for Florida, even though they screwed up and didn't realize what they were doing. They got some last year. It didn't come to fruition, but you know, this is where it is. So there's a lot of planning that goes into it. It's kind of a fun look there. So just also one more thing this week, Utah will be debuting the hand-painted helmets. They will, I think they said on social that it'll be on Friday. I'm curious to see what it looks like. They've usually turned out pretty well. Utah, I believe, is undefeated in hand-painted helmets. So,
oh, that sounds like a very fan stat for you to throw out there. That means they're winning Saturday?
Well, you've got that mixed with Utah's on an 18-game home winning streak. So, I mean, this feels, you know, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, apparently the 18-game winning streak, per my mentions, that's like a no-hitter.
Oh, okay? I know.
You can't bring those things up.
That's why you can't write about it, right?
Who's stopping me? You? Are you my boss? No, kidding.
Look, I'm cutting that out. If you put that in there, I swear. No, I'm just kidding. I always find that kind of stuff funny. Like, I'm not a very, like, superstitious person, but I found myself as a younger kid, like when I'd play basketball or different things like that, I became very superstitious, and it's like I've got to wear the same socks, and I've got to wear
a
bracelet or wristband or something, like, and none of it made sense. It even then, it was just like, I don't know, but it's just funny like how sacred these types of things are. It's like, you can't talk about it.
Yeah. But seriously, on a serious note, the hand-painted helmets thing, which has kind of become, I don't know if I'd call it a tradition, but it's been an ongoing thing here for the last few years, like very, very cool initiative that's been happening with Utah football for the last few years. A couple of years ago with the USS Salt Lake, you know, with those hand-painted helmets. And then was the Ty Jordan Aaron Lowe helmet, that was last year,
right? Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah, yeah, very cool initiative. And if I'm not mistaken, some of those helmets go to auction, right? The money goes to charity. I think they do that throughout the throughout the offseason. So that's another benefit of doing these things. I myself, as a much younger person, was very, very into the uniforms and the helmets and just the entire thing. As I've gotten older, I've kind of like lost interest in that. I've moved away from that. But something like the hand-painted helmets, I'm actually very much looking forward to seeing what it looks like once it drops on Friday.
And I will always say they do look much better in person.
They do. That's true.
I mean, the photos are great, right? Like, I'm with you. Like, I don't get caught up in uniforms, and it's more just kind of like, okay, that's interesting. Hand-painted ones, I'll pay attention to a little bit more just because there's obviously a lot more work into it. This one, I have heard it is Musk-themed. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that will look like. I don't know. I'm curious to see what that means, but it'll be interesting. They put a little teaser out there. It looks like the bottoms are black. Look, I don't care. I don't care. I'm teasing you guys on this, and I don't really care. So just enjoy it. Be a fan. Go watch College Game Day. I have to take my kids because they've been pleading me.
You are taking your kids.
Yeah. So it's...
you're a good dad.
I'm not. You are. I'm not, though.
You are. No, you are.
Well, we'll see. They've been pleading forever, and it's like, well, if I don't, like, what kind of a dad am I if I don't? So I'll partially work it / send them out to the crowd and hope that they don't get into some depraved behavior. And hey, maybe they can go kick Pat McAfee's field goal. If my oldest can go do that and win us $65,000, I'll take that.
Is he too young?
I don't know.
Is he eligible for it?
He's not. He's only 15, so you got to be, I think, 18. We can lie, right?
I was going to say, I won't tell if you don't tell.
We're telling everybody on this podcast. It's fine. So,
love it.
What's Pat McAfee going to know? He's not going to check, is he?
I like McAfee.
I do.
I know that he's a bit of an acquired taste. I think he's really funny. He's not a journalist like Reese Davis or Pete Thamel, but I do think that McAfee has brought a different dimension, a fun element to College Game Day. But I understand if you don't agree or if people don't agree.
See, I want college football to embrace more of that WWE mentality, right? Like, I want just outlandish things where the coaches, you're seeing like a Ryan Day freak out at I'm trying to remember who it was, Lou Holtz, you know, like, I want to see that. Like, college football more than any other sport should embrace that type of level. Maybe not full, crazy, but like, there's no reason Pat McAfee shouldn't be allowed on the airwaves and being able to do what he does. And he can, you know, he rubs people the wrong way sometimes.
Sure.
But I love it. I think it's a fun shtick, especially for College Game Day. I admit I don't watch his show, but I do tune in from time to time to watch him on Game Day, and I've loved him. So, to each their own.
I was watching his show, like, right after he retired. He went to Barstool. It was a podcast at that time. I was definitely listening to McAfee's show when it was at Barstool in like the very early days. I thought it was a good product. Like, you didn't take him like too seriously. It's become a little more
charged,
become a little more corporate now.
Well, under that's
ESPN umbrella. I mean, I don't listen every day, but again, like, I still enjoy the product because you have to remember like not to take him too seriously. And I think you'll enjoy it. That's just me.
Just have fun. It's college football. Let's not take it too serious.
We're here for fun, and maybe we'll write some stories this weekend, but mostly for fun.
Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
We might just put our feet up this week, sit in the press box, do that.
Is that an option?
Think we can do that? I'm in. We can get paid. Hey, what happened to that story? It's fine.
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
All right, guys. Well, we're going to sign off now. It's been fun. We hope you enjoyed the episode. It's crazy, deranged, delusional, whatever you want to call it. It's probably accurate. So
it's fun, though.
It is fun. We're here to have fun. And, you know, just make sure you're watching film before you watch this Utah game. You never know what Sione Vaki's going to do. So with that, we're signing off. We'll chat with you guys next week as we recap the game, and we'll find out who won. Have a good one.
Later, guys.